Welcome to Life Minute TV, your life, your minute on everything lifestyle. Celebrity buzz, music and movie news, fashion, beauty, homestyle, wellness, and more.
Oscar-winning actor Chris Cooper and his wife, actress and screenwriter Marianne Leone Cooper, have collaborated on a short film called Nuts that premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival this week. We caught up with a talented duo from their home set in Massachusetts to hear all about it.
So what was your initial reaction when asked to participate in this quarantine living, you know, film challenge?
My reaction was, no way.
And mine was, what the hell else are we going to do? We're not going to work. I mean, let's do it. We haven't acted together since before we were married.
True. So. And so having, you know, been in this business and doing film work and all, I mean, you really respect all the different departments, and you turn out that the two of you are pulling them all: lighting, camera, sound, hair, makeup, wardrobe. I thought we were in for just, it was going to be a nightmare, you know, but we actually kind of had a good time.
Tell us about writing the script. You know, what did that process look like?
Well, you know, we had a very elderly Bichon Puisse, Frenchie Garibaldi Cooper. And I thought I wanted Frenchie to be memorialized in the piece. And I'm glad we did, because we did lose him in September. And I knew he'd be great in this because he was like so laid back. The stupidest thing I did was write wild turkeys. And, you know, they come every day and I feed them and I'm the scourge of the neighborhood for doing it. But it turns out when you aim a camera at something with a pencil eraser sized brain, they run away. So this went on for days with us.
We had to literally, you know, set up the tripod outside in the yard, ready to go. And then as we would see the turkeys approach for feed, I'd circle behind the house and come way around to the front yard in order to operate the camera. But it was really,
it was tense.
It was touch and go. For a bit.
There were tense moments where we, you know, there was one where it was like long after midnight and we were checking all the equipment. And I said, has the sound been off all night? It turned out we were so tired, we forgot we turned off the sound 5 minutes ago. So it's that kind of thing. Yeah.
But we, you know, the wonderful thing that made it a whole lot easier, I realized Marianne wrote the script. What helped us was that we almost could shoot the whole thing chronologically. And then, as folks know, you know, oftentimes telling a story, you got to shoot one scene over here and the next scene follows is in another room or outdoors. So we confined our location to a living room, dining room, and kitchen area. And that was a great help.
How long did it take to shoot?
2 days.
Yeah, and we followed the rules, unlike...
I'm
going to go there, but...
Don't go there.
No. No, we shot it within what they allotted was like 2 days, one day for the producers to look and suggest possible reshoots, and an extra day for reshoots, and that's what we pulled off.
That was the turkeys. So, yeah. So it worked. I mean, it did. We really had a good time. We did. We laughed a lot doing it, and I don't think we ever got tense so that we were...
Yeah, there was a little period at 2 a.m. where...
Oh, yeah, when we thought the sound. Yeah. But other than that, it was pretty good. Also, I was a little jealous because the funniest line in it was improvised by him. And I was like, oh, great. Showing up on my own husband.
What were your intentions for the film? Like, what message did you want to convey?
You know, I think we just wanted to reflect about staying together. We've been married, this year we'll be married 38 years. And we wanted to do like a low-key funny thing about a couple that had broken up and were considering getting back together again. And I think it worked.
It was left wide open as to what kind of subject, what kind of storyline.
Right.
And we went to Tribeca Film Festival. We just got back 2 days ago and got to see 4 vignettes, pretty longer vignettes. And my God, it was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
I was very impressed with what these folks pulled off.
We're blown away.
How do you feel being a part of the Tribeca Film Festival?
That was great. It was totally fun. I don't think it's the first time you've had a film in there.
No, I was asked to be a judge a number of years ago and just had a wonderful time and really nice pieces that they had me judge. It was an international film. So I think the one that year was from Tunisia. That was brilliant little film about making young young boys bombers.
And I was there a few years ago. You were working, but we did a documentary. We were part of a documentary honoring our beloved acting teacher, Wynn Hanman, who founded the American Place Theater. It's called It Takes a Lunatic, and it was a wonderful doc. And we had contributed to that, and we met in his acting class, actually, many, many years
ago. Yeah, Wynn had claimed that he brought us together.
Yeah, he said he brought us together because he gave us a really hard scene to do. He gave us Morning Becomes Electra, and we were in our 20s and crazed and just spent all day and all night, you know, like having millions of meetings and coffee shops and whatever. Ended in a 38-year marriage. So.
How close do your characters in the film mimic your own traits and your dynamic between the two of you?
Yeah, I'd say of my whole career, this is about the closest to me playing me as...
Right. And I really do have a little misophonia, but not as bad as this person. But yeah, I think we do have that kind of jokey, get along, mellow relationship.
I hope it came across.
You both had some incredible roles of your careers. For each of you, which has been your favorite and which has been the hardest?
I got a handful of favorites for the work that I've done. I mean, Lone Star, a John Sayles film. John and I have done 5 films together over 25 years. So we average once every 5 years, and we hope to, you know, down the road work together again. Lone Star was big for me as a studio film. Breach, this story of Robert Hansen, who gave secrets to the Soviets. And we still to this day don't know how much damage he did. But that was a big one as well. And
Adaptation?
I could go on and on, but your turn.
Of course, I did 4 seasons on The Sopranos. And, you know, I also am a writer and I've written 2 books. And, you know, the writing on The Sopranos just blew me away. And the fact that they got it right. I'm Italian on both sides. My parents were immigrants. I remember when that show came on and I said to Chris, they're never going to get it right. And then I saw the opening. You were doing American Beauty. I said, we're getting HBO. Oh my God, they got it right. Oh, did they get it right? So when I was asked to come on, it was great. Although I felt a little like I'm a writer, I'm an actor, but it was totally fun.
And we saw it real recently and it's wonderful how well it holds up.
Yeah, the writing really holds up. And I did have fun. I had a lot of fun doing Larry David's Clear History, the HBO film, mainly because it was shot here. And basically, I got to like be in a ditch and just swear at him in my own homegrown Boston accent, which I spent years getting rid of. And that was just a fun thing. And also, it was really fun acting with Robert De Niro in Joy.
Joy.
That was my next question. Who have been some of your favorite people to work with?
Oh, man, the list. I've worked with Robert De Niro in 3 films. And I must say, man, if working with that man, there's an expression actors use, be in the moment. And he puts you there. He's fantastic to work with. And working with Meryl Streep and Robert Duvall, Tommy Lee Jones, Ben Affleck, it's a long list.
Is there anyone that you'd still like to work with that you haven't, or any roles that you still like to portray but that you haven't yet?
I'll put it out there. I'm looking for the script about the architect, Frank Lloyd Wright, and why nobody has done, maybe the family estate doesn't want to do anything yet, but he's had such a long career and such a dramatic ups and downs throughout his life. I just would love to see a script come up about that.
When I saw the mother in My Brilliant Friend, I thought, now she's the distillation of every bitter, enraged woman I've ever played. I would like to play somebody like her.
And working on this film together, has it inspired you to work together again?
I think if the right thing came up, we'd definitely be up for that, right?
Yeah. Whether, you know, to create something and go that distance, we haven't even considered that. But, well, I'd be happy to work with Marianne again.
How do you prepare for a role? Do you have a certain way you go about it?
He disappears. He just recedes. I remember when you were doing Adaptation and I looked up and you were at the table wearing the fake teeth that he had, looking like a crazy person, talking to yourself. I thought, oh yeah, he's gone now.
No, thank God they sent them about a month and a half before we started shooting. And you needed to have that time because it really distorted the way you speak. You got a whole nother set of teeth in there. And that took some getting used to, but
he is meticulous preparer. I'm not as meticulous. I used to do comedy. I was in a comedy group. I think I'm more improvisational. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, to answer your question, it's like every script asks something a little different of you. And sometimes I work differently through just kind of feeling what I need to do, what I need to come up with. If it's physical, if it's vocal, if it's creating history. I mean, for me, research on a period or a character, that to me is half the fun.
And then sometimes it's really close. You said when he did Irresistible, John Stewart's film, you said that was just totally, you know,
yeah,
that was close
yeah.
to you.
And it was a light political comedy that we did last year. And
you just had a ball.
Great, wonderful group of people to work with. And it was just a different feel, not so intense as some of the other requirements, you know.
Marianne, how do you get creative when writing?
You know what? I got used, you know, our late son, here we are in the country. We moved here because we wanted him to go to school and we were having a hard time in New Jersey. And I will say that I'm used to writing in the midst of chaos. I mean, I had an office, but people would be like, oh, we need ink for the printer or blah, blah, blah. So I'm just used to writing in madness. So that's good. I can go there even with everything swirling around me.
And how do you guys relax? What do you do for fun?
Well, one of the things, we have the new rescues, right? We have these new two little rescue girls. We take really long walks and it's really beautiful here. We live on the South Shore of Massachusetts. So we live very near a bay. So we take these girls there's cranberry bogs and it's just really beautiful. And I like to swim. I swim every day in the bay from April to October. I have my girlfriends that I've known since I was 10 years old. We call ourselves the Sea Hags and we go whenever the tide's high. He doesn't go in till the end of like maybe September because he's used to Galveston, right? He's used Galveston, to like warmer.
And I mean, just honestly, house maintenance, I can keep myself busy every day finding something to do around here or the yard. And like Marianne said, we go on 2.5+ mile walks with these new dogs of ours and they move along. One of them has a hunting instinct. So she's like pulling me as a sled and we get the workout.
Right? Also, Chris is an incredible gardener. You should see, I wish I could show you. He's like an old Italian man. He made an arch and we have this grapevine that's incredible down by the pool. And he's the one who like strung it all together. And he's very good at that because Chris was the only guy, like when we were all starving actors and everybody was doing these horrible jobs, like waitressing or whatever, he was a master carpenter. So he does a lot of stuff like that. What he's talking about, he put wainscoting up for us. He put a new roof on our house the minute we moved here. So he's like one of those.
You guys, like you said, almost been married 40 years now. That's incredible. What's your key to a long marriage? How do you keep romance alive?
I think we both decided that we weren't going to, I think anger, repressed anger just kills everything, starting with sex. And it's better if you just say, you know, that really irritated me when you blah, 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 before it gets to, you know what I mean? The point where you just hate each other.
It's so to communicate. Communicate. Yeah. Communicate.
So none of the simmering resentments of my earlier years and his earlier years.
It's really true. I mean, you know, we're here 24. We had the advantage during COVID is that both of us work out of the house anyway.
Yeah.
So we're in each other's face 24/7 and we just have a ball.
And also humor plays a big part. I will say that, I mean, nobody knows. Chris keeps getting these hard ass roles all the time, but he's really funny. And nobody makes me laugh like Chris. So there's that. We make each other laugh. I really think humor is huge. And we're bonded by our love for our son, who is no longer with us, but it was such, I mean, you know, when something that devastating happens, you either get really together or you don't make it. I get it because it's so earth shattering.
Can you tell us about some of the work you've done for disability inclusion?
Well, we were executive producers of a documentary called Intelligent Lives, which you can go to at intelligentlives.org. Mm-hmm. And it's from a friend of ours, Dan Habib, who has a son like our son was with cerebral palsy. You know, Jesse was brilliant, but physically his body didn't work. So this is about how testing can marginalize people with disabilities and it marginalizes also immigrants. I got both sides there. And Chris has done voiceover for others. We're available. In other words, we lend ourselves to these kind of things. We speak about it.
Yeah, our energies with disability are, we keep it more local in Massachusetts,
right.
And that keeps us kind of busy enough.
Right. We just did, like during the pandemic, we did a thing where I read Jesse's poems and Chris read stories by, it's an art center, Gateway Arts, that does art with people with disability. And some of the artwork is fantastic.
Intellectually challenged folks
or not.
Some of the stuff that these people turn out is remarkable.
Yeah. So we did a reading. It was like a formal thing. We support disabled orphans in Romania. We did a thing for that. And we even spoke Romanian. I don't even know how we did that. They gave us a phrase to say.
Yeah. Confederation for Children with Special Needs locally here.
We have an advocacy fund in Jesse's name, the Jesse Advocacy Fund, because I always think of what it would be like to be somebody like my mother or somebody who didn't have the funds to get an advocate.
First generation Italian whose English was a second language. And
yeah. Dealing with people who were telling you, no, your kid can't come to school because blah, blah, blah. You need an advocate in the room with you when you do that, if you're fighting for your, because even though it's on the books, you still have to fight for it. A lot of the times, depending on the state you're in too, Massachusetts is better than most. But even Massachusetts is town by town. So, you know, we're spread out on that. And I've written op-eds and essays about that.
What is your advice for being successful in life?
I think I'm learning. And man, it had to be beat into me. Just don't take things so seriously. I was so intent early in this business, acting. I could have enjoyed it a whole lot more if I didn't take it so seriously. But, you know, then on the other hand, taking it seriously kind of paid off.
Yeah, don't expect it to be handed to you. I mean, I really feel like I didn't expect anything to be handed to me. It was slog work. It was really sloggy and it was scary.
Yeah, you're really on your own in this business.
Yeah.
And in the early years in class, there was all this information of other actors telling me, you know, this summer, all the regional theater directors are going to come to New York and audition actors for their seasons. I had no idea, but then I went and I was cast to work at Actors Theater Louisville in its heyday in the early 80s, when their lit department was turning out a number of plays that came to Broadway. And I did a couple of seasons at Louisville. Huge shot in the arm for my career.
But also just take any, you know, I'm sure it's different now because I think it's all online and blah, blah. But then you bought the actual paper, the actual dead tree paper of Backstage, and you look stuff up. And I answered an ad for an NYU student who was looking for someone for their film. That student was Nancy Savoca, who the next year wins the Hague Manoogian Award. And we acted in her film. And then she goes on. I said to my husband, I said to Chris at the time, I said, she's going to make, I know she'll make a feature within the next 5 years. And certainly she did. She made True Love and it won over Sex, Lies, and Videotape at Sundance. And so through her, we met John Sayles and Maggie Renzi, and Chris did Mate Once. So, you know, that was from answering an ad in Backstage. So, but I mean, we both worked. I mean, then I became Chris's handyman too. I carried sheetrock up flights of stairs with him and stuff. So,
and that won him over.
It did, actually.
Oh, I knew she was the girl for me after that. Yeah.
So what's next for you two? What are you working on?
Well, you know, I mean, it seems clear that the industry is trying to figure out what to do at the tail end of COVID and how we're going to carry on. I'm just waiting for them to figure it out. And I'm reading a few scripts here and there, but I'm still happy to say, not stressed. I'm content. We're very lucky to be living where we live, and we'll see what happens down the road.
And I just finished my third book, which is called A Five Dog Epiphany. And it's about rescue dogs, mutual healing, and grief, which I think probably resonates to a lot of people right now. I think the whole country is feeling grief, even though we're emerging, we're blinking at the cave's entrance, but it's affected us all.
It was so great to go to the Tribeca Film Festival and just see that it's slowly coming back. It was great to see people in the street and to socialize with some of the other actors who were there. We miss New York terribly and adore it. It was great to visit.
And will your film, will people be able to watch it?
Your guess is as good as mine. I'm sure it'll end up streaming somewhere, you know, I'm sure.
Yeah, as I understand, I mean, we saw four vignettes at the festival, and that was volume one. And I think there are 13 films, so maybe there's three volumes.
We shouldn't say, because we don't really know.
Yeah, we don't. It's. I'm sure it's...
Yeah, I'm sure it will be picked up, because the four we saw were wonderful. It wasn't nuts. It wasn't our piece.
To see more of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, Life Minute TV.